Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Polvencia. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks. This is episode 186.
186.
186 episodes.
Wow, man.
We've done a few of those.
Yeah, and it's April.
It's April.
The flowers are blooming and the snow is melting.
Birds are chirping. The snow is melting.
I guess.
You mean on the mountains that are miles away from us? Yes.
Well, I'm thinking about the poor sap who lives in like Maine, right? Or in the plains of Illinois, I guess. I don't know.
That's a good point. I just think about those people just ice fishing and having the time of their lives, you know? So that's, I'm not saying I'm jealous because I grew up in Florida and, you know.
Sure. Well, maybe they're offended at this point as they sit inside of their iced tundra igloo. Well, it is April, so we already passed April Fool's Day, so whatever happened to you, happened to you. Get over it.
It's true. Hey, we've done a few of these episodes before.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a little awkward for me sitting here with you and your wife.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've learned to deal with it over the years. It's okay.
Yeah, you know how to deal with the bickering and the stepping on each other's lines.
It's okay. It's all right. Hey, but before we get into more of that,
yeah,
we're going to talk about Idea Nights.
Yeah.
They're coming up in September.
Correct.
And you're like, hey, the portal's not even open. I've checked many times because you've advertised it at least five times now.
Right.
It's called Building Hype, people.
That's right.
We want you to be excited about it.
Yeah, you're going to register. We want you to register. Not quite. Yeah, what we want you to do is sign up to host. Yeah, that's right. Maybe you're thinking about hosting. And we're going to obviously have one here in Las Vegas. There's going to be 50 locations across the country. And maybe God is leading you to be one of those 50 locations. Even if you've never done it before, we would love for you to apply. And all you have to do to apply to host for your local community is email us at engagement@ideanetwork.church. That's engagement@ideanetwork.church. Now, if you're not familiar with an Idea Night, how does it differ?
Right.
The answer is the Idea Summit. That's our national conference that takes place every 2 years. The Idea Days are regional conferences. A couple of them take place every year. And then the Idea Night is local. We're talking about just your local ministry context, inviting your local ministry leaders to one room to gather together and talk about local issues of the day. The best ideas, philosophical, theological, and methodological for your location.
Now, we hosted an Idea Night here last fall.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the attendees there was a guy named Steve Witt here from Vegas in the Well Church. And we actually had him on the podcast recently, if you go back and reference that. And in that Idea Night, he talked a lot about the importance of soul winning. And really, even in that room, a lot of the ministry leaders, that was the huge takeaway for them and how God convicted them of changing the course of their ministry and placing a greater emphasis back on not only just sharing the gospel from the pulpit, but also one-on-one soul winning. I think even in your own ministry, like that's changed maybe some of your outlook and how you've done things in the past couple of months.
Absolutely. It was at the Idea Night that God began to really speak to my heart once again. What are you doing wasting time not telling people individually, one-on-one, the gospel, and sharing with them how they can be born again, asking them to pray, to receive Christ as their Savior, even there. And man, I got to tell you, I was so thankful that Steve Witt, and that, by the way, that was Steve's very first Idea Network event.
Crazy.
Yeah, and we love him so much. We gotten to know him as a friend, and I'm like, hey, man, you got to speak at our thing. And that's what I'm saying that you might be able to experience. What Drew and I are attempting to say is, as a ministry leader, you know there's 5, 6, 10 pastors in the community that really should get together. Well, why don't you invite them over for an Idea Night and have a few of them speak? And in doing so, you're not only going to change your perspective on things, you're all going to be encouraged by one another and perhaps even motivate each other to reach this kingdom or expand the kingdom in your local community.
So here's the ask. Even though you can't register now, we want you to email engagement@ideanetwork.church. That email gets sent directly to Corey Kanoff's inbox, and he'll respond to you if you want to host an Idea Night or if you're interested in attending an Idea Night here in September. Please email that again at engagement@ideanetwork.church. All right. Well, on today's episodes, we're going to be talking about grit and grace, preparing your child for the real world with the one and only Heather Tice. Welcome, Heather Tice.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Hey, we're excited to have you.
Are you nervous?
A little.
To be in the presence of such greatness?
Yes, it's always intimidating.
I don't know who he's talking about, but it's anyway. Passionate opinions are expected when discussing something as important as parenting. We all love our children. Therefore, we are going to develop deep convictions. You're laughing. Why is this?
I'm laughing because I just realized you guys always bring me in on the controversial stuff. Like, let's talk about women in ministry. Let's talk about parenting things. Well,
ideally, there's nobody else in the world that we trust more than you. So, I mean, it's okay to talk about controversial things, right?
Because you trust you. Sure. And you're good at addressing controversial subjects.
I don't know. Do we have a spin room after this that can fix all the things that I say? They're like, this is what she meant.
Yeah.
Because we're going to need that. That's the Idea Talks podcast.
The reason you address controversial issues is because you are the apex of pastor's wife, right? You will say whatever you want to say.
That is
you're
not
going
me.
To get your I'm point Southern. Of view.
I think it.
Yeah, you think it.
I tell you later.
That's true. Well, we want you to tell the audience because you're comfortable with Drew and you're comfortable with me. Yeah. So just pretend it's us and give us your true biblical perspective on these things.
Okay.
Back to the intro. We all love our children. Therefore, we're going to develop deep convictions and passionate perspectives relating to raising up our most valuable resources.
Yeah, but Heather and I have noticed some extreme philosophies entering the Christian world that seem to be highly reactionary to equally extreme parenting philosophies, like a pendulum. Parents swing from no-nonsense, gritty approach of authoritarian rule to the nonsensical, grace-guzzling approach of permissive parenting.
Grace-guzzling. That's a wow. So what is the biblical balance in this family framework? Today, we're joined by the lovely Heather Tice to talk about grit and grace, preparing your child for the real world. That's assuming that we're supposed to do this. We don't just parent our kids to be good kids.
Right.
They're going to be adults one day.
We're actually supposed to be making them ready to be adults and leave. It's like, what is it they say about motherhood and fatherhood would be the same? You're trying to work yourself out of a job. Like when you have success, it's kind of sad because then your job's over and they leave. It's a different kind of badge of honor than you get in the typical workplace, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, and in the typical relationship, let's say marriage relationship, the goal of the marriage relationship is to keep it going in perpetuity, to make each other both happy and holy. Holy first and happy second.
But I want to talk about that, but that's another podcast.
Yeah,
I'm sure. I did not love that marriage session. He did not teach it. Someone else taught it. No one we know personally.
Was it like at an idea day or somewhere else?
It was like a small group kit.
Oh, that's right.
And the
right.
guy just made marriage all about holiness. And Kate Snook and a few other friends of mine, we were like, what?
Yeah.
God also gives it to us for happiness.
Happiness and
there's
holiness.
There's a lot. He really oversimplified. And
but in that
now
relationship,
I'm steaming.
Yeah, she's steaming. But in that relationship, it really is a continued relationship. And though your relationship with your children is going to continue, it transforms and transitions into a much different relationship. And so the question is, really, how do you approach parenting so that you're parenting your child for the real world? Heather, what do we mean by grit and grace?
Well, grit, I mean, when you think about it, first of all, you should think of John Wayne, because true grit, there it is. I was raised by a good man.
That's right. And we're in our 40s. Can you tell?
So, but that's what I do think of because that was the first time I heard the word. And it's that idea of toughness. They are tough as nails. And then, of course, grace, I would use the word from tough. I'd go to gentle in a sense because, in fact, it's so funny. A friend, she didn't even know we were going to be doing this today. And last night she was poloing me and she was talking about this very thing. And I had not heard the term gentle parenting. I've heard grace parenting, grace-led parenting. All this is big right now. But I had not heard it from the perspective of gentle parenting, which is like, I don't know if that's a newer term or just what she's heard in her neck of the woods. But I thought, boy, that really fits. It's those two things, tough and gentle. And I like that you titled this session with this title because we do need both because that's who Christ was. He was tough. He was tough as nails, but he also had the balance that John Wayne didn't always have of being gentle. Yeah. And we need both those and showing grace and digging into the root of the issue and caring about the soul and taking the time to invest in them.
You know, in the 1960s, there was this perspective that began to be developed in the secular world by Dr. Spock and others, not the one you're thinking of, the other Dr. Spock, that was expressing the idea of permissive parenting. And in waves, The Christian community began to kind of push back on that a little and say, well, traditional parenting includes authoritarianism. It includes very clear lines, very clear rules. It includes corporal punishment and all of these things. And then gave the rise, as the pendulum tends to do, it swung all the way over to this, what began to really be developed and what we saw, and I saw even our early pastorate, of just a very strict, almost distant relationship with their children. Do this, cross this line, you're going to get beat, you're going to get spankings, and this very authoritarian perspective that really pushed children far away. And it almost seems like that authoritarian conservative parenting style was a reaction against this hyper-permissive parenting style that really gave rise in the late 60s to the 70s. But now we're getting to the place where we've lived long enough to begin to see the pendulum swing back. And instead of instilling a sense of law, and you cross this line and there is punishment, there's the sense of no lines. There is no line, and there is no crossing of a line, and there's no punishment. And then we call this grace. So I kind of wonder, why is a foundational understanding of the law necessary before grace is introduced in parenting? What do we mean by that?
Well, I think I should just answer with the book of Romans. I mean, just go to Romans. The first third of the book, at least, is nothing more than just, you're a sinner. You're terrible. You can't do this. You don't measure up to God. You're imperfect. It's very blunt, very clear about this world, our wickedness as a world, and God's wrath. I love the picture it gives. It's like a fire kindling and growing. It's just being fed. And one day, that judgment, that hot pouring judgment, will be released upon those that remain upon this earth. But that's what you see. And why does Paul start there? Because you can't receive and appreciate grace until you know you need it. And what boggles my mind and hurts my heart is that parents are trying to express grace to young children who cannot receive it, not only because they don't know the law yet and they've broken it, but that they are too young to grasp that concept. They need to know law, I would say two L's, law and love. They need to continually be told, no matter what, I love you, but that's wrong. You cannot do that. You cannot cross this line, and there are punishments every time, but I love you. And that's, I think, what we see ultimately woven throughout the book of Romans. And it leads into, from that law into, but God chose us. He commends his love, and he sent an answer for our needy souls.
So how does this practically play out whenever it comes to even raising young children? You know, for us, my daughter Savannah, who is now 16, and Scarlett, who is 14, were sitting at the dinner table with us, and we were talking about parenting of infants and toddlers, and they were asking about this very question because they do a lot of babysitting, and why is it that some children seem to obey babysitters, and why is it that some children don't? And we talked about the fact that some parents teach grace before they teach law, and so the child doesn't have a proper understanding of right and wrong, and Savannah said, well, how do you teach that to a toddler? And the answer is, by discipline. And she said, well, how do you mean? And we talked about what we used to do with M&Ms. Now, this is going to shock some of our audience because, oh my goodness, how in the world could you be such terrible people? Oh, get ready to judge us. This is how we would do it with M&Ms.
Well, you did the M&Ms, so you share that one. I did bath time.
Okay, so with M&Ms, I would sit our little, I don't know, 9-month-olds at that point, even up to 12 months, and they would sit as soon as they begin to reach, and they knew what an M&M was, shiny and pretty and colorful and also taste yummy, and they could eat them when they could eat them. And I can remember as they sat on my lap, I would put them on my lap at a dinner table or something, and they would reach for one, and I would say, no. And they would look up and they'd get angry. Child doesn't like to be told no. They like to say no, but they don't like to hear no. And by the way, if you don't tell your child no enough and then enforce it, they'll tell you no the rest of their life. And so they begin to reach for it. I say, no. And they, And then you could see the determined will to keep reaching for it. And they're going to touch it because they don't care what I'm going to say. And then the moment they touch it, I say no. And they flick their little finger. And it's amazing the shock, like the shock that some of you are feeling right now as you hear this and judge my parenting style. And you're like, oh, and that's exactly what happens. Their little lip pushes out. And they just shocked that their daddy would do it. And I would say, no. And what I was doing was associating pain with the word no, because they need to know if their authority tells them no and they disobey the no, pain will follow. And so they would hold back and they would stop crying. And then I'd play with them a little bit and make sure they calm down and their little fish brain starts to forget what happened. And then I'd put them back in my seat and say, all right, there. Ooh, look at the M&Ms. And they'd reach out. You're like, that's entrapment. Yes, it is. Then they reach out again. I say, no. And almost train them. You say, like a dog? Yeah, but with less intelligence than a dog. And I would just train. They need to know the line. And the line is, you don't disobey. And if you do, there's going to be pain.
Yeah, so I did something a little differently. I mean, we did many things. These are two examples. I don't remember if I ever did the M&M thing. I know there were definitely things they could not touch that I would deal with. I think phones, you know, phones, the cell phones were a new thing at the time. And so now I know children get to play with them all the time. But back then, like, it was the Stone Ages where, like, you can't touch this ever. You know, well, I can't replace
which
it.
Which arguably might be still a good idea.
That's true. But anyway, I remember bath time would be a big one. And I'm just going to be honest, this is lazy parenting, which is sometimes smart parenting. There are certain areas of the body that
need a little spank first, right?
And they're exposed. So it's pretty easy and quick. And that's one of the things, if you've got young children, you need to understand, if you're going to teach them and train them, it has to be immediate, because they don't remember, they're not going to connect 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, where you have time to sit down and walk them through everything. You know, now this is what we're spanking you for, because 10 minutes ago, you know, this happened. They can't, they're too little to understand
that.
Yeah,
walk them in, so have a quiet time, look
really
them in the eyes.
Really teaching immediate.
Daddy loves you. Well, if they're 18 months, they're 2.5 years old, they have no idea what they did a half hour
right.
ago.
And you have to do it in the moment. You can still talk to them. You should talk to them and explain things, but in the moment. And by the way, there's also, I think, a form of abuse when you over-explain. That's a whole nother session we could do about parents that, oh my goodness, well-meaning Christian parents that sit and every time the child does anything, young or old, they have to have a 30-40 minute sermon. Yeah. And the kids are just dying. Man, that's something to sit through.
Would you say, I know it's maybe more stage than age, but like, would you say that age, because I'll just preface it with my question with this, right? Like, I remember growing up and like, I would do something in church, you know, sitting with my dad. And then like, it just, whenever I hit that line with my dad's like, you're getting in trouble when I get home. And you're talking like, we would go out to Taco Bell after church. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble when I get home. And then like on the car ride, I'm like, maybe you forgot, you know? And I'm just like, so I was dreading it, right? Mm-hmm. Like the whole time, like I remember, you know, like, oh man, the dread, the fear mm-hmm. of dad, you know, when I finally got home to you know, to administer my punishment. Is that like, you think closer to like 4 to 5, 3, like where is that?
I think
that,
it
right?
depends on the, kind of maybe what you're referencing with stage. Every child's different. Yeah. So you have to see where they're at. How much they're retaining and remembering.
Yeah.
I definitely elementary and up, you're fine. I would say probably even, I mean, my goodness, I'm trying, this is the hard thing about getting old. Like our youngest is 14 now.
Right.
And we both have really bad memories. What would you say? Cause you and Christina do a great job with parenting. Y'all've got very young children. I mean, it seems like, what are we, 4?
Yeah. I mean, I got a 2, 4, 6, and 9 year old. So
even 3-year-olds, I used to teach cubbies. And I feel like 3-year-olds, I know you can do lessons, you can memorize verses. There's a lot more understanding there. I think it just depends on the child, but definitely at 1, there's just so little, they're learning so much, but there's not a lot they're able to retain memory-wise or connect in that. They don't have that logic built yet.
I agree,
So back to the bathtub thing, I'll finish that. I would just say, I would teach my children to come to me when I called. Mm. We would get out of the bathtub. Of course, you know, we'd go to their room. There's toys. Immediately, they want to play toys instead of getting dressed and whatever. And I would set them at the door and I would go sit in the room. You know, there's toys all over around me. And I would say, come here, come to mommy. And I would say it nice like that. And of course, sometimes they would do it right away. Sometimes they'd look, you know, because they've got strong will or stubborn, or sometimes they're distracted with a toy. And I would say, come to mommy. And if they didn't, I would stand up, calmly go over there and give a swat. And, you know, they were shocked sometimes. And then we would do it again. And then sometimes they would come on the first time, by the way. And no matter when they came, first time or second time, I'd give them a big hug because I wanted them to recognize just as much as there are problems when we disobey, because our whole goal is teaching them obedience to authority, because who is their authority? God. As an adult, I want their will to be used to when God says it, if I don't understand it, I don't feel it, I'm still going to obey in that moment. And when I don't, there's consequences. And when I do, there's joy in the Father. So that's what we're starting. Even in early age, obedience is so important for the Christian. And we want our children to become Christians. We want them to walk with God. We want them to obey Him.
It's not only God who will be their authority in life. They'll have many authorities. And here's the problem. If you don't teach your child where the line is, someone else will. Yeah. So there's an entire generation who's grown up today, and they have no idea where the line is. So now a boss at Chick-fil-A has to tell them where the line is. Or a boss in the army is going to have to tell them where the line is. And you've done it not only a disservice to society, you've done a disservice to your child because you did not properly show them, here's the line of the law, and you cannot just get away with disobedience.
Yeah, I'd say there are three S's to kind of wrap up this part. The reason we teach our children obedience and the law, especially at an early young age, and then we flood them with grace. Yes, we have those grace moments, which we probably should talk about next.
We will.
But yeah. There are three S's. Safety, first of all. My goodness, young children need to be taught quickly to obey. That in that moment, they're going to respond, because that's important. I mean, I can think of so many illustrations that we don't have time for. But I'm sure some are rushing through your heads too, listeners. It's moments where that child needs to get out of the street. You're unbuckling the baby and your child's walking toward the street. You've got your arms full and all you can do is say, come here. Yeah. That moment matters immensely. So safety is huge for society, which is what you were referencing, Josh. And I would say it's not just for like, oh, I don't want to get them to get thrown in jail. Quite frankly, we want our kids to have friends. And there have been times that we've had to address sin issues in our kids' lives. And we're like, this is going to be a problem for you as well with friends. You're not going to have friends. And we, like you said, our teenagers can see it with children. There are children that the teen girls in church, quite frankly, do not want to babysit. They don't enjoy being around those kids. Other children don't enjoy it. Why? Because the child has not been taught anything about behaving, because mom and dad are so concerned to be gentle that they're not training them. They're not giving them guidelines to help them grow to be a member of society, even if that's a small Sunday morning classroom or preschool classroom or what have you. And then last is spiritual, which we just talked about. We want them to have this response to God and begin to understand that obedience always brings joy. So those are the three S's there.
So I have a question. Isn't it a bit simplistic and even irreverent to associate parenting a human child with the image of God, and you're associating it with training an animal? I mean, isn't that just wrong?
Well, I believe you associated it with training an animal.
So but, am I wrong to
but
do so?
No. I think the whole point of that, and I actually, a book that had truly helped us because of the perspective we came from that was very balanced, referenced that. I think it was the first time I had heard it. It can be very offensive to people that an animal can be trained, but the whole point when this is used, or at least it should be the whole point, is people say, oh, you can't teach your children. That's when people started bringing this illustration light. You can't teach a child to do a certain thing. Okay, you can't teach a child, but you could teach an animal that may not even have the intellect of a child. I think animals can be very bright. I guess some children can be dumb, but usually the dumbest child is still brighter than we would hope than the smartest animal. And most parents believe their child is smarter than all the children. Mm-hmm. So if your child is so smart, you should be able to teach them and train them just as you can an animal. Now, you're not going to sit down and explain to your cat you know, why they can't, I don't know, run out the door. What do cats do? Cats are wonderful, but what do you have to teach a cat?
You don't
a dog,
train
you
a
teach
cat.
Him not to drink out of the toilet.
A cat does whatever a cat wants to do.
I was going to say a cat.
And then when you die and you're rotting
okay,
in your living
room. Jump
on
the counter.
Room.
That would be one.
The what?
He wants to talk. He hates cats. I love cats. I think cats are wonderful.
That does not surprise me about you.
Oh, yeah. They're good. They're good animals.
The moment you die and you're laying in your living room rotting, that's when your cat realizes it's time to have a fancy feast.
No.
And your cat will eat you because it has no loyalty to you.
Hey, listen,
a dog will
the strong
lay on your
survive.
The strong survive. The strong survive.
But the point is, let's say you have a wonderful little cat, kitten, and you're training it not to jump on your countertops, which if you have a cat, please train them not to walk on the table and the countertops,
Thank
people.
You.
That's where your
that.
Food goes.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I just never met a properly trained cat that I like. That's probably it.
But... if you're doing that, you're just teaching the cat the line.
Right.
Why do you not teach that cat grace? Because they don't have a soul or spirit. Excuse me. They don't have a spirit. They don't have that ability to commune with God and to follow in obedience to God. You're not sitting your cat down explaining the things. You're just teaching a cat a response. That's what the problem would be with children. We do need to have that time where as they get old enough to understand, we say, do you realize why? We should share some of the why. We should explain the benefit. Like, again, we've told our children, not only do you do this because we say it's right and God says it's right, but also we want you to have friends. How is it going to affect your friends? How do you feel when people treat you this way? So we start teaching them the why. And then did you want to add to that?
Well, with a biblical, the way God does it with us, our Father, is he begins with the law and then he brings in grace. Grace disassociated from the law means nothing, as you stated earlier. And so if we begin with the law and understand the consequences of law, then later on, chronologically, as the child gets older, his mind begins to mature, he begins to understand the consequences of what this means, not only in the moment, but who I am as a person, my relationship with God, my relationship with others, my relationship with my parents. I need grace. I need forgiveness. And then properly introducing that concept will not only open their minds up to what it means to be forgiven, it'll open their minds up to who God is. And then suddenly, now you've truly trained your child.
I think one of the keys that we need to remember, and some of you may be panicking because you grew up in a home that was maybe on abusive. The wrong side of the pendulum or abusive, or you've just read a great book and you so much want to show grace and you really have seen God's grace in your life and you're struggling with this. Do you know that even when we talk about this, while I may not be explaining to my, you know, 1-year-old, all the concepts of grace, I am still, as I'm teaching the law, putting down rules, setting boundaries, and enforcing the consequences immediately, I'm going to be showing them grace because I'm going to be showing them love. I'm not going to be doing it in anger. If you're doing it in anger, that's called abuse. It's calm. It's accepting. I don't accept their sin, but I accept them. Jesus, who was the Holy One, the one without sin, he accepted sinners. He came to them. He loved them. And that's the key. It wasn't the Pharisee. Some of us do Pharisaical parenting. You know, we're like, oh, thank God I am not like these, you know, and we push that line. There has to be continual mommy loves you, daddy loves you. And there should every single time that there is an interaction of punishment, there needs to be restoration. There needs to be hugs. There needs to be, we're going to sit and spend time together. And quite frankly, I think that's sometimes why we don't do parenting right, because it takes a lot. Yeah. And for every, the more I have to spend, there are stages of each of our children. There were stages where they needed more law in their life. Let's put it that way. And each time that meant I had to know this is going to require a lot more grace too. That meant I'm going to have to put work and other things aside and I'm going to have to invest in time with them. It can't be that all I do is correct, correct, correct. We're dealing with issues. Grace means I am sitting with them, letting them know how much I love them. As a believer, I talk to my children once they're saved, and we pray and we ask for God's help in living right, because we can't do it on our own. And I talk about the struggle. And that's one of the ways I think that's important to pour grace into parenting, and it can start even from an early age in that way.
Well, and it should start from an early age specifically because they are in their early childhood development years. Remember what Proverbs 13 says. I understand. I love the people listening to this podcast, young parents who are thinking, but I love my child. I love them. I love them. I can't see them ever experience pain. And that's where the wisdom of the Bible reminds us. The person who spares the rod, talking about discipline, and all discipline is uncomfortable, he that spares the rod of discipline hates his son, but he who loves him chastens him early. Early in the life of the child, they should be constantly chastened because you love them. Now, I understand that there are those in this room, you alluded to it a moment ago, who genuinely have experienced abuse. And it's incredibly difficult for you to put your mind around the idea that there can be pain brought about by a loving parent at all because of what you experienced. And what you experienced was tragic. It was not proper child discipline. It was wicked. It was godless. And it came from a place of anger. And you know that. And so putting your mind around the idea you can really love your child and then properly administer discipline that is uncomfortable is difficult for you. And what I would say is don't think about your earthly father, your earthly mother. Think about the chastening of your spiritual father, who, when you inevitably go off track, as I do, he will put you in an uncomfortable place of discipline. He will chasten you to get you back on track, and he does so because he loves you. Don't think of who your physical parents are, but your spiritual father. And do look to people like Heather and Josh, and who have raised children who seem to be doing relatively well and may have had a different philosophy than what you've learned, and seek counsel, call them, talk to them. And you have men and women like that in your life. Follow their example.
Take a good Christian parenting course. There's a lot of those out there that can be really helpful. The thing I would add too is, and you alluded to Heather and Josh with parenting, I want to make this very clear, should go without saying, but we are far from perfect parents. Mm. In fact, talking again with my friend last night, I was brought to mind so many things that I just didn't get it done in parenting. I failed at that area. And that's where it goes on my prayer list and I pray. And that's where grace comes in on our side of parenting is if you think that you can do it all because you are just going to be, I'm going to present the law. Okay. Well, that self-effort, it's not going to produce godly fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
If you think I am going to be the grace-filled parent and I'm going to go deep with my children and all I'm going to do is just flood them with grace and let them experience the goodness. No, that's also self-effort. You are doing it and you are trusting a philosophy, not the God who knows the heart of your child, who searches out the heart and who loves them more than you do. And that's the key, and is we've got to humble ourselves, say, God, I can't, I don't know how, and it's scary. And by the way, if you're parenting right, it should be scary. Like, I mean, honestly. So lean on your Heavenly Father. Ask Him to show you what to do and give you the power to do it.
So in the end, we want to encourage you, not discourage you. We know what it is to be in those early childhood development years, and it can seem endless. Whereas they say, the days are long and the years are short. But in reality, you feel like it's never going to end. We're your friends. We want to encourage you on the other side of this. As Heather said, we're not quite there yet, but have gone through a bit of the journey beyond where you're at, that both grace and grit are necessary to infuse into your child. And if you find yourself erring a little bit on either side, just being a little bit too authoritarian, maybe you need to take out your child and have some fun. Or maybe you find yourself a little bit erring on the grace. You've had some deep intellectual, philosophical conversations with your two-year-old, and they annoy everybody. And maybe you need a little bit of grit. No matter where you find yourself on this, pray about it and ask the Lord to help you, by His grace, make you a better parent.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.